Well, my full name is Charles R. Williams. The R started out as Raymo, R-A-Y-M-E-U-E-X. And my mom says, oh, no, I don't want that. So she chopped all that off and started calling me Charlie Ray.
Charlie Ray.
Charlie Ray.
So that's what you go by, Charlie Ray.
Everybody called me Charles or the Chief.
What can I call you?
You can call me anything you want to call me out of the conversation. People have called me everything.
I'll call you Charles. Is that all right?
That's fine.
Okay.
Okay.
And you have a title or what?
I'm a U.S. Navy retired chief. My specialties were high dial mechanical systems, and I've been in some intensity that really rocky world. I was the guy who was the chief engineer of the tug fleet during the 70s that used to haul weapons from Concord to the open seaway. And I think that and 42 months in Vietnam was the most trying things that I've ever been through, you know.
What years were those that you were in Vietnam?
In the 60s, starting in 63. And I didn't stop that until 67, off and on. And sometime we had to wait off the coast, you know, and the Coral Sea and all these ships were having airstrikes. And we'd have to actually go and pluck the pilots, wherever they were. There's a couple of times here and there we'd have to hit the beach, you know, which was crazy and dangerous, you know. And one time we hit the beach, and we had to pick this one guy up. I never forgot him. That was the third time we had picked him up, believe it or not.
Uh-huh.
And he was a little bitty guy. And I grabbed him, and I was running so fast that I lost my glasses, you know. I never knew that I'd hit the water. I hit the water, and I was stroking with him on my back, and I turned over, and I was pulling him. And the boat was no more like maybe 100 feet off the water, off the beach. And, you know, you learn all these things, and these things ingrain themselves in you to be patient, to wait, and wait for the situation to gel and, you know, mature. And that was the biggest thing about my maturity. Because when I was a kid, to get away from the gang wars and all the killings in the 50s, I used to jump on the trains down in L.A., just go jump on a train, look at the little manifest on it, and go someplace. Riding the trains and riding the rails taught me the intensity of life, and people educated me. I met doctors, lawyers. I met everybody on the road. And sometimes I end up in New York one time. Upper Grand View, New York. Oh, my God. I was looking at this place going, how in the heck did I get here? You know, so I learned life, which is transcended into my life today. It made me more different from most people because I'm a people person. Uh-huh. And I don't look at race, you know. I look at the fact that I had to raise everybody's problems as a chief petty officer. And I had to bury some of them, you know. And that was the bad thing about life. And I was sitting at Oakland Army Base watching all the dead wagons, we call them in the South, the hearse, you know.
Yeah.
The funeral cars go by, and I counted 300 one day. And I couldn't function for about two months. I was just bad mentally. And that has marked me for life, you know. And what I do is I look at people with an open face and an open basis.
Well, okay. If you don't mind, if I sort of shift it.
Sure.
Maybe just a bit more to now, like, why you're running for mayor and all of that. First of all, though, I'm just curious, like, what does Oakland sort of mean to you?
Oakland, to me, is heaven.
How's that?
And the fact that I've lived over most of the world, you know, and I came back here, believe it or not, this may sound kind of crude to you, I came back here to retire, to live, and to die in peace.
Okay.
And it didn't happen. It's not happening. I woke up one morning, a Sunday morning, I got ready to go to church, and I walked out my door. Here's a 15-year-old on one side of the street with an AR, one of the brand new ARs, by the way, which is coming into the Bay Area. You know what an AR is, don't you?
Yeah.
Automatic rifle.
Okay.
Military-grade automatic rifle. And then there was another kid on there. He was like 18, 19. He had a Tech 9, which is, you know, another military grade.
Heavy duty gun.
Heavy duty. Killer. Man killers, I call them. And they were warring at each other. They fired 37 shots and never hit anybody.
Yeah.
Never even hit. And then when the kid across with the Tech 9, he was standing there. He was just like somebody had taken his insides. I walked across the street and I told him, I said, you're a dead man. But you know what? And then that day I went to St. Columbus that day, and they said I had all the crosses in front of St. Columbus on San Pablo. And what is that? Alcatraz in San Pablo. Uh-huh. And I said, I can make a change here. Something inside of me says, you got to stand your butt up and get out there and say and do, and you got to make a change.
So public safety for you is your big, I mean, that's like the hot button topic.
No.
Right now for most of the candidates,
no.
Maybe.
The budget, then public safety.
Okay.
Because the budget sets a tone and a standard for everything you do. If you don't have any money, you can't do anything.
Okay.
Oakland is creeping toward default. And, you know, the biggest part of that is here where my living in the world and my experience in the world, that sets me apart from any other candidate that's running. Because most of them are microcosm right here in Oakland, right here in the East Bay. You know, they don't have any idea of world values, what happens in the world, and the consequences.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I find that most of the candidates that are running, and I'm not knocking anybody specifically, okay, they're in this little globe. They're in this vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them are attorneys, you know, and they are very good at telling you what you want to hear. This is their life. You got to give it to them. They will convince you that the monkey's dead. The monkey could be running up the street. You know, that's my analogy of it.
Right.
You know, but you have to be real about this whole thing. Is that, you know, my difference is my survival. Whereas a lot of their differences is their sociality, as I say.
Well, I think it's pretty clear that you have a very worldly background and you've been a lot of places. How is that then translate to your ideas on how to fix the budget, for example? Or do you have specific ideas on the budget?
I have very hardcore specific ideas, and I'm a numbers person. You know, I told one of the candidates before the garbage contract, you heard about this mess about the garbage contract.
Yes, I have.
I told them, I said, you know what, I'm not going to specify who it was, okay, because I don't pass the
dollar. Well, just
okay.
For the people, the main issue is that the contract had expired, and the city didn't want to renew it right away.
Oh, no,
right?
That's not the main front of the whole thing. The fact of the matter is that traditionally, and I've been doing business in the Bay Area since 1965, okay, 66. Well, now, actually 63. I was at Hunter's Point.
Okay.
The big thing is, and everybody should realize, in the Bay Area, the fabric of contracts, 20% of every contract that's just about garnered in the Bay Area is soft money. Trips, golf, even I've seen hookers, cars, boats.
Okay.
I've seen it all. You know, that's 20%. So you just knock that off. That's waste, as they call it.
Right.
Cost override is very critical and crucial in the Bay Area. And any economy, when the economy is up, the cost override goes up. I've seen this all over the world, not just here. I saw it in Dubai. I saw it in Japan. You know, when I was in Hong Kong, we was dealing, you know, with ship overhaul stuff there. Wherever the economy is up, the cost override goes. And if you look at the situation here, 35% of every contract since 1990 has gone up in cost override. The Bay Bridge is one. The only one that's come under budget is 580 when they had the fire on the 580 causeway. And that was because they paid the guy millions and millions of dollars to finish Hurley. Okay. Otherwise, he would have drug that out just like everybody else.
Right. Right.
The other thing that's critical and crucial is where the dollar is. You have to do a trend, how the dollar floats. If for example, we're at our highest right now, the stock market is at 17,000. And I learned this from living in Hong Kong when the Hang Seng and all those were just coming into being. I used to sit there and read books about this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at where the dollar is and where the dollar floats, you know, then you get a whole picture of everything and how things are trending, you know. And this is what I look at. That contract was killer because it was doomed to fail before it even got finished.
Okay.
And what one company did, they threw a low ball, and then the other entity looked at the low ball and took it to another entity, and they lowballed it even further. So the cost override is going to be horrendous in there.
Well, so if Oakland is not good at, you know, dealing with contracts and making them stick or just making them good, you're saying you have ideas on how to make that better.
I will kick your tail on numbers. Period.
What does that mean?
Then, in other words, you throw a number at me, I'll tell you whether it's good or not. You know, one of the big things is...
But you can't make people do their job. Like, you can't make some independent contractor, if they're going to be, you know, jerks or corrupt about it, you know, it's not that the number they give you might be bad. It's that, they're going to draw it out and sort of make it last longer.
Here
right?
we go.
That's the issue.
Here we go with detail again. We're going to get back to detail.
Okay, tell me.
You have to be detailed about what you do. You have to do your homework. You have to know what you're doing. That's where it goes to.
Okay.
You have to be intense and diligent in picking every little nitpick thing out of that contract down to the nickel. And that's the difference between me and them.
So you really think that your attention to detail, that you'll just really hold people to that. You'll hold people's feet to the fire, essentially.
That's
you won't
right.
want to get away with things.
That's right.
Is what you're saying.
That's right. And there's corruption in any industry, not just Oakland, in any city.
Sure.
There's a lot of corruption
there
right
is.
Now.
It's everywhere.
You know, a friend of mine who's a budget expert, he told me corruption eats up another 15% to 20% of any budget. So if you got $100 billion, you've ate up 32% of it already. So your billion is not no billion no more.
Right.
So you're going to have to infuse some money down the line into that.
What does that mean, infuse money?
Shortfall. Shortfall.
Where's that coming from?
It comes out of people's pockets.
Via tax?
However you can get it. Via charges. You going if I sell you a garbage can for $20 and the price goes up to $27, you're going to pay that $27, aren't you?
Me, the consumer, you mean?
Me,
the homeowner.
You, the homeowner.
Yeah.
That's right. All it is common sense and attention to detail.
Well, let's talk about public safety here briefly. It is statistically sort of a trend right now that violent crime is drastically down in the last year, but it seems like that, you know, the police and community relations are not as maybe strong as people would want them to be. Like, how do you see the Oakland Police Department, and, you know, what would you do? Would you do anything differently from what's being done now?
Well, let's start off being realistic, okay? Crime goes up and down depending on the economy. Okay.
Okay.
And I'm gonna throw something at you that no other candidate has said to you. If you take $150,000 times 5,000, I mean times 500, that comes into, if I do my
what
math,
is 500?
Five hundred. There's 500 mid-level contraband. We'll call them contraband dealers in Oakland. That's between $60 and $80 million a year. This is a good number because there's more than that. That's a lowball number.
Fine.
There's more than 500 people doing it. We know that. But you take 500 people at $150,000 a year. That's about between $60 and $80 million.
Okay.
Going on how it runs.
Okay.
Okay. This is the cause of crime and death in Oakland right there. These kids, they're very poor, and they would rather not live in poverty. They would rather live with the chance of going out and making some of this elusive money that it's a pie in the sky that they're after, and everybody wants to drive a Benz or Rolls or something like that. This is the problem. You know, before I came along, I was asking people, well, what's the problem over here? You know, well, you know, this and that, and they're blaming everything on the police department. You know what combat fatigue is? You ever seen it?
Tell me.
It's horrible. And you take an individual, you infuse him into a violent situation 12, 15 hours a day for 4 or 5 years. He's a basket case.
Yeah.
This is what's happening to OPD. This is what happens.
So you're saying they're just too, they're overstretched.
They're overstretched and overtaxed. The bad thing about this whole thing is it bleeds into their families, okay? A lot of them resort policemen, and I've been around just about every kind of policeman in the world, being on armed forces police. A lot of them are on the bottle. A lot of them drink. You know.
Well, so what are you suggesting exactly? That we just, that Oakland hires more officers, or what exactly are you proposing?
Oakland does not have the budget to hire a lot of officers. My thing is 700 is the magic number. And to keep the, they said 900. That's not real.
If okay, you so keep, you're asking for seven, you want 700 officers. Right now there's about 550.
Right. Another 100, 150 would make the cake real nice, so to speak. And then I would have like 100 to 150 observers, like ambassadors, they call them. And I would train these guys to secure crime scenes. Then I would get four forensic teams. And, you know, four forensic / investigative teams. This is crucial to Oakland's whole chemistry of surviving things because guns are coming in at an alarming rate. And one of my friends I was talking to in Washington, D.C. a couple of months ago, he said that the guns are coming up from Arizona and Nevada through L.A. and up Highway 5 because they're coming from open gun shows and illegal sales. And they're bleeding into the West Coast city right now. This is the corridor.
Okay. So yeah. What do we do about that?
That's going to be hard to attack. That's going to be very, very hard. The biggest thing is you got to educate the people that guns aren't everything. And you see 12 and 14, 15-year-old kids over there. Five doors from me, a 12-year-old kid died last year because somebody had given him a semi-automatic weapon. And he didn't know it was loaded. And he's pointing it. You know, and killed his friend.
Yeah,
you know
that's horrific.
It's horrific. The big thing is you have to understand the chemistry of the whole law enforcement thing, and Oakland does not do that. That's why they hire all these consultants to come in and tell them what to do, because nobody's trained to really look into the, so to speak, the nitty gritty of things and look into the very chemistry of why problems are problems. You know.
Wait, so what are you saying exactly? You're saying then that you wouldn't, that like all of your money for public safety wouldn't go into just the hiring of new officers, that go into finding the roots of these problems? Is that what you're saying?
I would find the roots of these problems, which I am very inclusive, and I have an idea and a theory about the roots of these problems. The big thing is, like I said, 700 officers, and then 100 to 150 of these people in small little put them in pickup trucks.
But how would you pay for if we just said that we don't have the budget, Oakland doesn't have the budget for that, where does this come from?
Well, you know what? They're just going to have to pay for it, because right now, if you look at it, people are paying for private security. And what people do not realize is insurance companies do not accept reports from most private securities. So if you have an incident in your house, the insurance company requires a policeman and a police report, a certified police report.
Right.
So they're just wasting their money to start off with. You know, it's a false sense of security, you know. And if Oakland would take into consideration to actually go into that business, okay, and say, okay, you live at such and such and such, we're going to charge you $10 a month. You know, that would work. And it would solve a lot of Oakland's problems to have people, what I call observers, and, you know, and the religious community, you know, they're always complaining about stuff. Have these preachers get their tails out there and ride with the captains in these divisions. You know, make sure there's somebody in a captain car or a car someplace in that division. You know, if they're out there, you know, complaining, and do something about it. Get off your tail and do something about it. You know, put some time in the street, you know. And if people know there's a minister in the car, you think they're going to do something wrong. They're going to know this guy is in this church and he's influential. They're going to know that, okay, guy, well, we don't want to do this in front of Pastor Joe Blow, so to speak. You know, that is what I call psychological impairment.
All right. When exactly, at what moment did you decide to run for mayor?
The day I saw the shooting in front of my house.
When was that?
That was earlier this year, to like March.
2014.
Yeah. Otherwise, I was not going to get involved. But you know what? And then I went looking into, here we go with chemistry again, and the knowledge that I have and where I have been in life and what people have taught me. I looked at the fact that I think I'm the most different person because my education didn't come in the classroom with theory. My education came from the world with reality and life and death. That's the difference between me and the rest of the candidates.
Concerning the present mayor of Oakland, what is your assessment of the job she's done?
Let me tell you something. There's two things that you learn in life. Don't burn your bridges, okay? And you never know who's going to come out of the dark to save you. So I look at that, and I look at the whole situation that the cabinet that she had behind her, they were not real. Everybody had ulterior motives. Not everybody, but most people had ulterior motives. You know, there's a lot of backstabbing in politics. There's a lot of falsities in politics. And there's a lot of, there's a lot of people that are just not real. How about that?
Okay.
And they are very selfish in my book. And, you know, to do anything in life, you need a team. And if the team is not there, the success is not there. And a lot of those people had ulterior motives and secret agendas, you know, and feeding their own pockets.
What do you think she got right?
Well, she, in her mind, what she was doing was right, like anybody, you know, and you have to give them that. You know, you can't take that. If I think I'm doing it right, she thought she was doing it right. She was very good at getting out with the public, but she was not good in actually solidifying things. Because here again, she didn't have a team, you know. She didn't put her foot down, and she didn't kick any butt, point blank.
And you would, so basically, you're just saying you would then assemble a team of people that you trust and of people that you just think are good.
If I'm the damn leader, I'm going to be the leader. You're going to get that straight. You're going to get that straight. And I'm open-minded. You can tell me anything. But if I am the leader, I am the leader. And I will not ask you to do nothing that I wouldn't do. And I told my guys one time, I was sitting there and I was blowed out of my socks and I've been drinking all night. And I said, wind them up, guys. Let's go die if that's what it takes. And I had this little thing. I would wind my finger in the air. Everywhere I went, hey, chief, wind them up. Let's go die. I'm going, oh, my God, what have I done? You know, and my captain told me, he says, that's leadership, buddy.
Uh-huh.
You just learned something from yourself. He said, you're stupid. He said, because you believe that. Whatever it takes. And I learned that on the road. Whatever it takes.
Well, all right. I got some more. I got just a few little personal things.
Okay.
That I want to get to here.
Okay.
When you were just a little kid, what did you want to be when you grew up?
You really want to know?
I want to know.
I wanted to be a lawyer when I was a little bitty kid. You know, and I used to think, man, lawyers got everything. They got money, they got cars, they got everything. Because the lawyer that came to our house when my mom passed, he always had this big, huge, it was a 53 Cadillac, you know, it was nice, and he was always dressed, you know, very impressive, you know. And as I transcended into life, I started calling them snakes.
Uh-huh.
Because they're snakes, period. They will tell you anything.
Yeah.
They will make you believe anything.
Yeah.
Not real. And when I went through a divorce in 2004, 2005, oh, God, they whipped the death out of me. And all that came back. Oh, hell no, I'm glad I wasn't one of them things, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't have no trust, no faith, and no lawyer.
All right.
Yeah.
What was your first job?
My first job was throwing papers.
A paper boy.
Paper boy.
That was my first job, too.
Paper boy.
Look at that.
Paper boy.
I like that job.
I like the bonuses. People used to give me like $5
in the 50s. Tips. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, here's $5. Thanks for throwing it on time. Yeah. Or throw it in this door here or throw it here. You know, and I made a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I was making $40 a month, $45 a month in the 50s.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, it was.
More than I was making.
People took good care of me. That taught me something, by the way. You take care of people realistically with your heart and no bullshit. They will take care of you. I'm sorry about that.
That's fine. Don't worry about it.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. Excellent. What's your favorite food?
My favorite food is Creole food, and I'm a good cook.
because you're from Louisiana.
I love to cook. If I didn't watch out, I'd be 300 pounds.
All right. I'm going to do just a few more with this. I just kind of want just your initial reaction.
Okay.
What's your favorite book?
My favorite book is, I love to read mysteries. Mystery.
Okay. And what's your favorite movie?
You know what? I've never seen any movie greater than The Thin Man.
All right.
From the 50s. The Thin Man. I love that.
Excellent. What's your favorite place in Oakland? Your favorite place to go to in Oakland?
Tilden Park.
All right.
I go out there and I'll just kick up and take my chair and sit back and relax.
And maybe one more. If you're elected mayor, who is the first person that you'd call?
The police chief.
Why?
Sean Wentz. Because I think his problems are more exasperated than any other department. And you know what? I met him. We was at their Black Policeman's Ball. And, you know, he is about, him and Chief Batch, two of the most warmest people I've met in law enforcement. And, you know, like I said, I've been throughout the world doing this. And Sean Wentz is, to me, he has a lot of compassion and a lot of dignity for his people. And he's a down-to-earth person, you know. And I think fixing OPD is not that big of a job. Like I said, people just don't know the chemistry. And they don't know, you know, the intricate, you know, little elements of policing.
Okay. All right.
But Sean Wentz is Chief Sean Wentz. I got to give him that. He is one hell of a person. Yeah.